The boardroom door opened and President Tiefeld's secretary poked her head out. "Miss Tenjo, the panel is ready for you." Utena stood up, straightened her jacket, nodded to the others, and followed her in. "Sit down, Miss Tenjo," said the president. As she sat, Utena tried to gauge the administrators' faces. Harris looked sour, but that wasn't much of an indication of anything. Dean Garwood looked a bit concerned, but that wasn't much of an indication either. The president looked mild and pleasant. Ditto. She sighed inwardly and forced herself to wait quietly. "We've reviewed your petition and taken your eloquent remarks into account," said President Tiefeld, "and we find that there is merit in what you propose." Utena's heart jumped. They went for it? "However," said Tiefeld, and her heart sank again. Damn, there's always a however. "However," the president repeated, "and though we take you at your word that you were the champion of the similar organization which you report existed at your last school, the fact remains that we have no way of knowing what the overall ability level at that school was with relation to this dueling activity. There are three of us from Otori Academy here now," said Utena. "Myself, Kyuichi Sayanji, and Miki Kaworu. Both of them were members of the student council." "Indeed, indeed. That is very interesting, yes. But I'm afraid it's a bit beside the point. Before we approve the charter for your organization and entrust you and your fellows with the responsibility of carrying out the dueling activity you've described, we feel it necessary to gauge your ability against a known quantity. To that end, Professor Harris has suggested that you fight a duel, in the format you propose, against Miss Elizabeth Broadbank, the captain of the fencing club, a young woman whose ability is well known to us." "And if I win, the Duelist Society gets its charter?" Utena inquired.
Win or lose, that's not really the point," said the president. "We merely wish to observe you in action. To see if,
to see if you're as good as you boast of being," said Harris with a faint sneer. It was as good as a direct challenge. Utena rose to her feet, her heart pounding, blood heating up with the old call to action. "If you can convince her to face me on duelist's terms," she told them flatly, "I'll take her on, anywhere, anytime." "I spoke with her about it during the recess," Harris replied. "She's quite eager to sample your freestyle experiment. She's a bit worried that she'll hurt you, of course, but if you've no objection, she'll take the risk." Utena smiled coolly. "That's very kind of her," she said. The duel was set for Saturday morning, to be conducted according to the format set forth in the Duelist Society's proposed charter. It would be held on the football field behind Morgan Hall, so that there would be ample room for the fighters to maneuver without endangering those who gathered to watch. Live weapons of the combatant's choice would be used. Word spread quickly around campus. Betting began almost immediately, the odds being posted and frequently updated on the WPI.students newsgroup. Utena was the dark horse, hovering at around 20-1. Even Liza Broadbank's detractors had to admit that the girl knew what to do with the sword, and Utena was an unknown in that regard. The first week of C-term passed, then, in an atmosphere of nervous tension. Utena herself didn't seem all that nervous, nor did Kate, but Ezalin became more and more fidgety as the week went on. Devlin's laugh got higher and higher pitched, and Amanda got grimmer. Sayanji was the picture of serenity. Miki was a little worried, but kept it well hidden. Moose took it all with the same equanimity that marked his every interaction with the world. And Dorothy... well, Dorothy was Dorothy. In that first week, Liza and her cronies were too busy preparing and acting unconcerned and such like to bother with much of anything else. It was a welcome reprieve for her enemies to have a week of Liza too preoccupied to harass them. Utena's overall popularity increased by a few points just on account of that.
though the effect was balanced somewhat by the exaggerated cold shouldering she was receiving from the fencing club and others of Liza's highfalutin circle. On Saturday morning, then, they gathered on the edges of the track-ringed football field, which was kept clear of snow and ice in wintertime by the concerted efforts of the plant services ground crew and some fairly high technology. On one side, the IBGF, which was, for the most part, the prospective membership of the Duelist Society, stood in a close little knot, bundled up against the morning's chill. On the other, the fencing club tried to look aloof, awesome, and remote, and for the most part succeeded only in looking cold. Claudia Montaigne, the Duelist Society's prospective admin advisor, stood with the rest of the Society's would-be membership. The three members of the advisory panel sat alone, up in the bleachers on the 50-yard line. Up on the embankment which separated the track and field complex from the higher elevated campus around Morgan Hall, students crowded against the fence. No spectators other than the involved parties were allowed within the complex for this experimental duel. The rules for student spectation of later duels, should the society get its charter, would have to be worked out in due time. A tall, slender figure with a lot of blonde curls detached herself from the fencing club and walked with an easy stride out to the center of the field. She was dressed in a fencer's costume, minus the mask and shielding pads, essentially a gray jumpsuit tailored for ease of movement, and carried a rapier lightly in her right hand. Liza Broadbank stopped at the edge of the field's center circle and waited, looking bored. "Well?" she asked the administrators in the stands, her voice raised just enough to carry to all present. "Where are they?" She turned to face the society. "Backing out?" Suddenly, the crowd at the fence parted, its excited murmur of conversation shifting into something more immediate and urgent. Two figures came through the gap up to the gate, marching side by side and ignoring the catcalls, from Liza's supporters, and cheers, from their own, equally. One was Utena Tenjo, dressed despite the cold in the uniform she had always worn for dueling, the black and scarlet of Otori Academy, with the thorn of the rose slung at her right hip. The other was Caitlin Hutchins, wearing her winterweight WPI uniform of black leggings, charcoal-gray skirt and sweater vest, white shirt, red neckerchief, and long black overcoat. Students weren't required to wear their uniforms on the weekends, but Kate was taking this occasion just as seriously as the rest of them, for the whole Federation had turned up in uniform. Utena went to the gate and thrust it boldly open, barely breaking stride as she passed through it. Caitlin followed without looking back. The spring mechanism in the hinges slammed it shut again before anyone could follow them. The two girls from Morgan 412 descended the concrete stairs to the track level at a steady walk, still eerily in step, and crossed to the center, stopping opposite Liza on the far side of the center circle. There, they turned and acknowledged the administrators, then faced the fencing club's captain again. Utena stood impassive, just looking at her opponent. Caitlin, Liza noticed, carried a pair of roses in her overcoat's top pocket, one yellow, the other white. She crossed the circle, removed the yellow rose from her top pocket, and fixed it to the spot on Liza's fencing tunic where a breast pocket would have been with a small pin. "Quaint," said Liza disdainfully. Caitlin gave her a dry little smile and turned, crossing to Utena. She fixed the white rose into her roommate's top pocket, and stepped back so that she was equidistant between them. The rules are simple, she said. Lose your rose? Lose the duel. Liza yawned daintily. "Caitlin, darling, I don't think the stakes of this little contest are high enough to really pique my interest." "It's a little late for that, Liza," said Kate. "Don't be that way," said Liza, a little poutily. "Would you object to a little side wager? Just to make things a little more interesting. I mean, it's all so dreadfully plain as it stands. You get your little club, or you don't. Who really cares?" Smirking, the blonde tossed her curls, indicating the audience massed at the fence. I'd rather give the public a real show. What did you have in mind? Asked Utrina coldly. Oh, I don't know, said Liza. Let's see. Oh, I know! How about this, Katie darling? When I beat your pet ogre... Caitlin noticed that the little muscle just outboard of Utrina's right eye had started to twitch. Other than that, the pink-haired duelist remained impassive. Why don't you resign your seat on the student council? Liza blinked as if a realization had just struck her. Oh, wait. If you did that, you would have to give up your band office, wouldn't you? And if you weren't involved with that any longer, then there really wouldn't be any point in staying at the Institute, would there? But then, a fragile, sensitive girl like you really should stay close to her daddy anyway, I've always thought. I'm sure Koopman Memorial has a band. Kate stared coolly at Liza for several seconds. You don't get to call me Katie, Beth, she said flatly, making a shadow cross Broadbank's two regular features. You want me to leave so badly? She smiled icily. I guess I must be doing something right. Then she turned on her heel, exchanged single sharp nods with Utrina, and left the field to join the rest of the Federation. She's so much fun to tease. No sense of humor, said Liza, but it was obvious to both the combatants who had won that round. Utrina said nothing. She merely took a half step back, dropped her left hand to her side, and drew. The thorn of the rose glided from its scabbard without a sound, its blue steel blade glinting in the hard January sunshine. Now where did a creature like you get a blade like that? Liza wondered, striking her own on guard. Her sword was a swept-hilt rapier, edgeless and agile, narrower and longer than the thorn, which was a cut-and-thrust blade. Liza's stance was that of the classic Western fencer, left hand upraised with elbow bent. Sword presented in a low, almost lazy grip. Utrina didn't mind that. She'd faced the type before. She didn't reply to Liza's question. Let the bitch wonder. Oh, well. Maybe a beating will loosen your tongue, said Liza, and she surged forward in a smooth opening strike. It struck Utrina at that exact moment that this was the first real fight she'd been in since leaving Sephira, the first time she'd crossed real steel with anybody since Akio. The first time she'd ever fought without Anthihimemia looking on. That thought gave her an instant's pause, very poorly timed, and nearly ended the duel before it began. She slipped Liza's strike with millimeters to spare, stumbling backward in an ungainly, duck-footed kind of way as she wrestled her consciousness back into consideration of the matter at hand, and Liza's high, clear laugh rang across the field. "This is going to be very short if you don't even pay attention, darling," Liza declared merrily, spinning to face Utrina's new position and leveling her blade again. Utrina snarled, dug in her heels, steadied up, and launched herself. She still didn't quite have her rhythm back, even after 2 weeks of training with Cade. Everything she did, as she and Liza clashed back and forth across the field for the next minute or so, felt slightly but completely wrong. Liza could sense it, too. Utrina could tell. She could feel the taller girl's amusement building. She's good, Utrina admitted to herself as she parried another arrow-shot lunge, knocking the rapier's point up to pass over her shoulder. The edgeless blade of the thrusting sword scraped along the rose-vine basket of the thorn. It wouldn't have cut her fingers, but having it scrape across her knuckles sure wouldn't have been any fun. Utrina twisted her wrist, forced the rapier away and down, then used a trick she'd learned from Caitlin's father. She rocked back and kicked Liza squarely in the stomach, sending the blonde tumbling away. A gasp rose from the fencing club and the assembled audience. Liza rolled to her knees, coughing, then staggered to her feet and backed away. When she had her breath back, she drew it and shouted, "Foul!" Utina's lips peeled back from her teeth in a rather nasty grin. "Don't be an idiot, Liza," she cried. "Didn't you pay attention to Kate? There's one rule here. Lose your rose, lose the duel. That's it. There are no fouls, only a winner and a loser." Liza's light blue eyes crystallized, changing instantly from put-on anguish for the administrators to cold hatred for her opponent. "In that case," she said in a hissing undertone that couldn't carry to the stands, "the loser is definitely you." Still hissing, the enraged fencer sprang. This was more what Utina was used to. Liza was apparently quite willing to discard the Marquess of Queensbury rules, now that she actually understood the code. Her style became a little less formal, a little less regimented, and she started throwing in little contact variations of her own. Liza Broadbank had very pointy elbows and showed a willingness to use them, but that was all right. Griffin-sensei had shown Utina what to do about elbows. The next time Liza angled one for her head, Utina interposed the thorn's basket. That discouraged the blonde from being so eager to use that particular weapon, and made a rather pleasing clang noise to boot. They scrabbled across the omni-turf for another minute this way, making no sounds except for the ring and scrape of their weapons, the shuffle of their feet on the plastic grass, and the hiss of their breathing. The onlookers were silent, awestruck by the fury and power both young women were putting into their battle now that both were getting their blood up and hitting their strides. "She's good," Utrina repeated to herself as she parried a thrust and missed with her riposte. "She's very good. But I've beaten better. Not here, though. Not like this. I was so unwilling to fight in the old days. I wanted to give up the tournament a dozen times, and kept coming back because Himemia needed me. And here I am, fighting a duel that doesn't have anything at all to do with her. What am I fighting for? Bragging rights? The kind of stupid glory I thought the others were in it for, before I knew the truth? Kate's friendship? She'd still be my friend if I didn't want to do this. Battle doesn't define the relationship between us. Does that mean it does define the relationship between Himemia and me? What is the relationship between Himemia and me? Jury made a suggestion once, but there was never time. Pow! Utina skidded a dozen feet or so across the frigid omni-turf, the side of her jaw smarting, her ill-timed train of thought completely shattered. Instinctively, she did as she had done in Griffin's dojo, throwing her feet up and over, flipping back upright and raising her blade just in time for Liza's to crash against it and skid with a burst of orange sparks across the edge. The point of the rapier barely nicked the edge of Utina's left ear. She felt the sharp, stinging pain, and a few seconds later, the warm stickiness of blood on the side of her neck. "Turnabout's fair play," she thought, and elbowed Liza in the smirk before the blonde could get off another jibe about paying attention. Liza tumbled, came up spitting mad, and launched herself, screaming. Utina set herself, lowering the thorn of the rose to meet her. Scarlet fire danced along the runic inscription on the sides of the blade, gleamed from the rose-cut gemstone in the pommel. Time stretched, suspending the furious fencer in mid-air. Utina could feel energy rippling up her arms from the enchanted blade, feel something inside her respond with a familiar growing heat. "Here it comes," thought Utina, and right on schedule there came that sweet, breaking surge of something that always heralded the end. She exploded into motion, meeting Liza's charge with her own, and the air was filled momentarily with fluttering scraps of yellow, vivid against the gray overcast and dead green turf. Utina landed, turned, cocked the thorn's scabbard, and slid the blade home in one smooth movement, her face perfectly composed. Liza Broadbank stumbled forward 3 steps from where she lit, dropped her rapier, and fell to her hands and knees, absolutely dumbstruck. The more perceptive members of the assembled spectators wondered where the epaulets, petticoat, and chain on Tenjo's uniform had come from. She turned to face the assembled administrators and said, You see now what I mean about it taking a duelist to recognize a duelist.
I do indeed, said President Tiefeld, a twinkle in his eyes. He turned to Dean Garwood. Well, Clarice?
Garwood surveyed the scene thoughtfully.
Our regular insurance would never cover it, she said, and Professor Harris was opening his mouth to make some comment when she added, But as the Society's charter calls for it to underwrite itself for indemnity purposes, I don't see any grounds for objection on that account.
Where are they supposed to get the money for that? Harris demanded. Not out of the student activities budget. The whole budget wouldn't begin to...
A benefactor has already stepped forward for that, Aaron, said Tiefeld mildly. We need not worry ourselves.
Well, then, if Clarice has no further points to make...
No, Mr. President, I'm satisfied.
Then I...
Well, I have, Harris blurted, nearly frantic with anger. I can't believe you're considering sanctioning this barbaric display. Kicking, punching, it's nothing more than blood sport.
The karate club spend all their time kicking and punching one another, Aaron, Tiefeld pointed out with patient calm. I don't see you objecting to their existence.
Harris sputtered for a moment longer, then drew together his shattered dignity and rose to his feet. I refuse to participate in this farce any longer. If you choose to approve the charter this bunch of miscreants put in front of you, on your head be it. I'll have nothing to do with it.
So saying, the tall, lean professor whirled and stalked away, his hair beads rattling with his annoyed, jerky gait.
Well, it appears Professor Harris has resigned from the panel, said Tiefeld with an air of mild, feigned surprise.
I suppose he'll need to be replaced before the next quarterly. Perhaps Dean Montaigne would be interested in his seat. At any rate, Miss Tenjo, your petition has been approved by the remaining two-thirds, which, if you will remember your math classes, is a majority. Congratulations.
He stood up, brushed down the skirts of his overcoat, and polished his pebble glasses before turning a beneficent smile on her. Utna bowed as deeply as she could.
Thank you, Mr. President, she said.
Tiefeld nodded pleasantly, offered Dean Garwood his arm, and smiled his way up the stairs, through the gate, and out of sight amid the disbanding crowd of spectators. The Duelist Society rushed across the field to engulf their victorious champion in the sort of mob that usually descends on the pitcher's mound at the end of a hard-won game of baseball. The fencing club, meanwhile, surrounded their fallen leader with something like mournful solicitude. All but one of them, who held himself aloof from the rest of the club, waited for the duelist to leave the field, and then followed them. They were crammed into wedge bench number one, the extra-large one next to the entrance to Mini-Deka. Everyone seemed to be talking at once, reliving one exciting moment or another of the duel, until finally Caitlin got them settled down.
Okay, she said. We're a chartered campus club with an admin advisor and everything. We've got a place to meet, Alden Hall, and a little piece of this student activities budget.
And an enemy in Professor Harris, Azalin mused, and he's a big jerk anyway.
True, said Kate.
And, thanks to Sionji, we've got an emblem, said Utna. She gestured to Sionji, who obligingly displayed his ring.
The rose signet was the seal of the duelists at our old school, he explained. Those who wore it were chosen for greatness.
We'll wear it here, said Caitlin with a smiling glance at Utna, because we choose ourselves for greatness.
So, everybody, said Utna, give Miki your ring size so he can order yours.
Why me? Miki asked.
All in favor of Miki being Society Secretary?
Aye.
Oh.
As they all shared in a laugh, the fencing club member who had followed them to the wedge from the battlefield saw an opportunity to enter the conversation and stepped up to the booth, drawing immediate attention by his appearance. "A word with you, if I might, Miss Tenjo," he said. Utna blinked, taken slightly aback. She still wasn't quite used to the more obvious sorts of non-humans one tended to see in this world, and this fellow definitely qualified. He was about her own height, lean and wiry, and more or less humanoid, but with an emphasis on less, for he had leathery skin the color of a spirit lamp flame, claws, a thick, mobile tail, and a head like a pteranodon's, complete with a rudder-like crest that was colored like a sunburst. His black eyes, which, disconcertingly, had reds instead of whites, glittered with what, on a human face, would probably have been delight, and the corners of his long, narrow mouth were turned up in what would have been a human smile, but that didn't necessarily mean anything.
"I'm sorry, I don't think I know you," said Utna, rising.
"Of course. Forgive me." The creature bowed, a sweeping, Western-style bow, with his arm crossed over his chest, and straightened. "Skaya vorikoshiga ar, ikstiktaa kitulkul vryhelt ishkarat, at your service. If you like, you may call me Sky." "Oh, well, I'm pleased to meet you, Sky," said Utna. "What's on your mind?"
"You," Sky replied bluntly. At her consternated look, he went on in an expansive tone. "You, Miss Tenjo, are the most remarkable, the most delightful, the most magnificent mammal it has ever been my pleasure to observe. You have such strength, such passion, such furious, reckless, abandoned courage. You embody Jikara. I found your performance just now to be the most inspirational thing I've witnessed since I left my beloved Barsave. If you were a Scrang, I would ask you to make me your mate. Since you're not," he added with a grin that showed a multitude of needle-sharp teeth, while giving the floor behind him a solid thump with his powerful tail, "I'll have to settle for asking if I may join your club, that I may have the honor of crossing steel with you myself one day."
Utna blinked again.
Well, we haven't finished electing officers or anything yet, so I don't know what we're going to do about new members."
She cracked a wry smile. "Got any references?"
"I live in Galaxy House," said the grinning Scrang. "You will find several of your fellows know me fairly well by now."
So saying, he threw his arm around Miki Kaworu's shoulders and gave him a ruffling. "A week sharing house with Skaya Vorikoshika Ar Ixtikta Kittel Kulvryheld Ishkarat is like a lifetime of friendship with anyone else, eh, Miki?"
"Liza won't be very happy about this," said Moose in a tone of voice that indicated he didn't find that prospect unappealing. Sky thumped the floor with his tail again. Apparently it was the Scrang equivalent of a loud laugh.
"I suppose she won't," Sky replied. "But that's her problem. Her title in the fencing club may be captain, but that doesn't mean she sails my riverboat."
The metaphor rather eluded most of the duelists, but they took him to mean he wasn't worried about it. And, pleased with themselves, the fledgling club adjourned to Ping's Garden for a celebratory lunch, taking along their very first non-chartered member. On Monday afternoon, Jacron stormed into 22S-2, steaming mad. The door slammed behind him, rocking a drinking cup balanced precariously on one corner of the common desk. It fell, and his new roommate, Harcourt Mackenzie, grabbed it in midair and replaced it before a drop was spilled. With his other hand, he continued highlighting passages in his physics textbook, not noting in the slightest that his new roommate was about to go on the 7th tirade in their 9 days of cohabitation.
"Can you believe this?"
Jacron slapped the Monday edition of the Institute Hill Beacon. This august publication was billed as WPI's alternative daily, which essentially meant it was a mouthpiece for Liza Broadbank's clique, the official school paper, Newspeak, having managed to maintain some level of journalistic integrity despite its unfortunate name. Jacron blustered onward.
"Now, I held my peace when I first heard of Broadbank's insults to Miss Hutchins."
He hadn't.
and I remained calm and composed when I read the insults laid upon Miss Hutchins's roommate.
He definitely hadn't.
But when those slanderous worms expand their mudslinging to include occupants of this very household, I cannot remain silent.
He never could. Jacron paused for the expected inquiry from his audience of one. When it failed to materialize, he gathered himself and continued,
On today's so-called Opinions and Viewpoints page of the Beacon, some anonymous contributor has called into question Mr. Kaworu's relationship to Miss Tenjo, accusing both of undermining the spirit of the school and, indeed, seeking to destroy the institutions which made Worcester Preparatory Institute great. I ask you...
Jacron paused in his pacing and gesturing to face Mac, who hadn't lifted his face from the physics text.
Is this not a textbook case of what you humans say is the pot calling the kettle black? It is a fine, fine day that dawns upon this school when a newspaper with not a single non-human on its staff accuses anyone of promoting cliquism and opposing diversity.
The script in Jacron's mind called for the audience to make some sort of agreeing noise here, and he waited several seconds for it. Mac, never having read the script, missed his cue cleanly. Jacron finally took a deep breath and continued,
Well, I, for one, will not stand for this hypocritical calumny. Tonight is the first meeting of the School Off-Worlder Society, and I shall move that we stage a protest against the Beacon, perhaps even a boycott. We shall show these slanderous creatures that they cannot get away with spreading lies against good, upstanding sapience.
Jacron's internal script now called for applause and agreement, and for several seconds he listened for it over the squeaking sound of Mac's highlighter on the textbook page. Finally, Jacron walked over to Mac and shouted,
Don't you have anything to say about this?
Yeah, Mac muttered, picking up a small scrap of paper and holding it over his shoulder to Jacron. Moose says it's your turn to buy toilet paper. Here's the shopping list. The paper vanished from his fingers, Jacron snatching it away and staring angrily at it.
Shopping?
Jacron, apparently, couldn't believe his ears.
Shopping? The reputations of Galaxy House, the Federation, the very Institute itself are being destroyed, and you expect me to go shopping?
Stomping towards the door, he shouted,
How can I live with someone who is so ignorant of such important issues? Slam!
The door wobbled in its frame for a couple of seconds, and the drinking cup made a second bid for freedom. Mac caught it again, paused, reached over to the nightstand, and picked up an object. 34 seconds later, the door opened, and two voices spoke at once.
Jacron, I forgot my wallet.
Mac, you forgot your wallet. Jacron walked over, accepted the wallet from Mac, and paused.
Do you want anything while I'm at the store?
Mac gestured to the cup. Refill, please. A moment later, a one-credit bill found its way into Jacron's hands.
All right, the usual.
Taking Mac's silence as assent, Jacron added,
I'll be back in about an hour.
And departed again, much more quietly than before. Mac paused in his highlighting, debated silently with himself about telling Jacron what he'd done to the radio presets on Broadbank's car, then decided against it. The deafening boom of Packlet Opera at full volume would be audible from 6 blocks away. The Narn would figure it out for himself. With a small grin, Mac returned his attention to the physics book. The rings were ready that day, too, duplicated by a jeweler on Highland Street and carried back up the hill by Miki and Utina, who made the errand in their newly minted capacities as the Duelist Society's secretary and vice-president, respectively. Utina hadn't particularly wanted to be an officer, but she had narrowly avoided the presidency. She'd convinced Kate to take that, but only by agreeing to take the Veep's job by way of compromise. The rings were handed out at dinner, much to everyone's delight. After eating with his new clubmates, Skye bade them have a pleasant evening, said he was looking forward to the first formal meeting the next day, and left them, heading out across the quad and whistling a little tune on his way to fencing practice at Harrington Auditorium.
He got there a bit late, which was customary for him, and sloped into the gym's large main room, still fastening his padded tunic, foil at his side, elongated helmet tucked under his arm. Liza Broadbank finished humiliating one of the freshmen and turned, whipping off her mask and confronting him with wrath in her eyes.
"Well, well, look who decided to join us," she said acidly. "If it isn't the disloyal lizard."
Sky paused for an instant, then put his carry bag down on the partly extended bleachers and turned to face her.
"You're talking to me?" he inquired calmly.
"That's right. I heard you went and talked to that Tenjo girl after her little performance on Saturday."
"Did you now?" said Sky.
"Indeed. I heard you had very flattering things to say to her, too. A little bird told me you called her magnificent."
Sky nodded. "I did that, yes. Also remarkable, delightful, strong, passionate, and courageous. Her performance inspired me."
"A fine thing to say to the animal who had just finished assaulting your captain."
Sky waggled his tail a bit and shrugged. "In every battle there is a winner and a loser," he said. "Your skill did not equal hers. It happens. There's no shame in falling to a superior foe if you fought with all you had."
"Spare me your lizard philosophy on courage," said Liza.
Sky sighed resignedly and sketched an elaborate bow, the rose signet on the middle of his left hand's three fingers glittering in the gym's lights.
"As you will have it, Captain, let there be peace in our house."
Liza's eyes caught the glitter and narrowed.
"What is that?" she demanded.
"My hand," said Sky, puzzled.
"Oh, this! They say it is the seal of the Duelist Society. I have a feeling it is more significant even than that, but I don't know the story behind it, at least not yet. Some of them treat it with the respect one would give the emblem of one's great house."
"What are you doing with one?" asked Liza, her voice cold and a little dangerous.
"I should think that was obvious. I'm not a thief, after all," said Sky, a little huffily.
You joined that rabble?" Liza sputtered, her face going crimson.
"Of course," said Sky. "How else can I hope to test myself against Miss Tenjo someday, else I become a duelist myself? I told you I found her remarkable, delightful, magnificent, strong, passionate, courageous, and inspirational."
No, I absolutely forbid it. No member of my fencing club is going to associate with that freestyle filth."
Sky's eyes glittered. His tail, constantly fidgeting, went eerily still.
"You may be team captain," he said in a calm voice, "but the charter of this club gives you no power over what other clubs and activities its members may pursue outside of club time."
"Nevertheless, I forbid it," Liza persisted. Then she composed herself a little, adopting a haughty tone, and said,
"You're going to have to make a choice, Ishkarat. Fencing and that gang's activities just aren't compatible. Surely you see that?"
Sky looked contemplative, the tip of his tail tracing a little oval on the floor behind him.
"Hmm," he said at length. "Perhaps you're right."
Liza smiled, a rather plastic smile.
"You see? I knew you'd understand the realities of the situation."
"Indeed."
Skaya squared himself up, swept her a bow, and said, "A very good day to you, Miss Broadbank. It has been interesting, playing at hatchling's sword games with you and your friends." With a little scrang grin, he turned and collected his bag, then made for the exit.
"What?" Liza blurted. You come back here!"
Sky paused in the doorway and turned back, still smiling.
"Chin up, Liza," he said cheerfully, slapping the floor with his tail. "Now you're the best fencer in the club at last."
Then he was gone, leaving her fuming,
her face burning under the curious, fearful scrutiny of her underlings.
"Oh, they'll pay for this," she thought. "They'll pay. I just need to find their weakest link."